Welcome to Profiling Criminal Minds. I'm Dan.
And I'm Dr. Redmond.
And we're here for our second last show ever about Criminal Minds Beyond Borders.
And it can't come too soon.
I'm not going to disagree with you on that one. All right, let's get started with the first episode this week, which is episode 210.
Type A. Now, when I got to the end of this, yeah. I laughed and I laughed and I laughed. I couldn't stop laughing at the end scene.
Okay.
I was doubling over. Okay, we'll get there.
I feel like that's a slightly strange reaction, but okay.
I'll tell you why when we get there.
Oh, no, I'm sure. Absolutely. All right, yeah. Synopsize away.
One sentence. An investigation becomes personal for Clara when SSA Emily Prentice informs the team of a series of killings in Taipei that are the exact same MO of an American serial killer who terrorized Brooklyn in 2001, including a detail about the crime scene that was never released to the public. In fact, there were two details that were never released.
By the way, given the sleazy press of New York, I actually kind of find it a little hard to believe that since the bodies were dumped in public places, right, and the cops were not the ones to find the bodies in all of these cases, it's kind of crazy that the detail about there being a purple flower on the body wouldn't have gotten out.
The other one, yes, but that
the
one?
Stuff about the knife, of course that wouldn't have gone out, but the flower...
There would have been a picture of this girl on the front page of the New York Post or whatever.
Pretty professional diplomat gets murdered and dumped in public. Yeah, that's going to be on the front page of the New York Post. There's no way it wouldn't, and people would have known about the flower. You're right that they wouldn't have known about the stabbing. Absolutely they wouldn't have. There's no way they wouldn't have known about the flower. Come on. Yeah, and the thing is, had the flower been, like, inside her jacket or something, then yeah, absolutely. But he leaves it in her hand along with the knife. So, come on. All right, so a guy is killing women in Taipei, and it's the same MO, so they have to fly in to help solve the case, which gives them a chance to spend, was it this episode or was it the next episode, where the episode ends with the cop revealing that, you know, I also went to the FBI's international training school, and it was the best possible thing that could have happened. And it makes everyone better cops. And I'm like, stop kissing up to this program.
Well, and that's
do the Clemente brothers work on this show too?
Yeah, except that it doesn't look like they're related. But
no, they are. They're brothers. I looked it up.
Jim and Tim are brothers.
Yes. Yeah, Jim Clemente and Tim Clemente are brothers. Jim is Tim Clemente's older brother. Yeah, I looked it up finally, and they are brothers. They're both FBI agents, and he dragged his brother over to Criminal Minds once he had enough sway there.
Well, let me put it this way, okay? Yeah. That's when I burst out laughing.
Ah, okay.
Was not the episode. That moment when he starts, and it was the best thing that had ever happened, and he never
learned. Right?
It was completely insane, and I'm cracking up because you've been saying this all along. Because the only time you have almost a reasonable relationship with the local cops in this show is when they've been to the FBI.
Yeah, and it's like the FBI. Well, you know, they're part of the elite level of cops who the FBI has taught how to be police. So, of course, they get along with the FBI because they know their place. Like, Jesus, this show.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I was listening to that and I was hearing you at one of the earlier episodes and I'm cracking up. I couldn't stop laughing.
Well, he's never been that blatant in the past. Because in every other episode, either they already knew each other from the program, him and the local cop, or at the end of the episode, he's like, here's a scholarship to go to this FBI school, you know, that teaches people how to be real cops. But
that's
this one, to spring it on us at the end is so bizarre. But yeah, it's like you said, it's almost as if they realized at the end of the episode that they had written this guy as a completely reasonable cop who never objected to the team's methods in any way. And they're like, wait, we've got to explain how that's possible right at the end.
A foreigner
that gets along with the... What? So yeah, But he doesn't know Jack. They're not already personal friends the way he is with everybody else in every country they go to. Oh, but yeah, it's hilarious and very stupid.
As I said, I couldn't stop laughing.
I get it. I 100% get it. All right, so the episode. So the guy meets singles through a website, drugs them with midazolam, and then murders them in public, and then murders them and dumps their bodies in public, which raises the question: what's going on with the midazolam? Because it is very unclear from scene to scene in this episode how long it takes to knock someone out. Because one woman, they're drinking like iced coffee in the afternoon, and it doesn't affect her until she gets to her car like an hour later, because it's dark out now. But the next lady, he gives a thing of champagne with a midazolam in it, and literally 3 minutes later she's on the floor, to the point where it's like, I don't know if he could have gotten her out of the restaurant in that amount of time. You know, like it just
one of the many things that was a problem with this episode
is like,
yeah, no, I mean, it was very, very strange. And all I can say is that they were eating and having coffee in the first one. And in the second one, they were just drinking and were supposedly going out to dinner.
No. They had finished their dinner.
I know.
Oh,
I
OK. Know. So you were trying to make an excuse, but you knew you were wrong. OK.
I was wrong.
You knew you were wrong. It's fine. So that was kind of frustrating. And I know that's, like, of all of the problems with this show, that's such a minor thing to deal with, but at the same time, like, you could establish how long this stuff takes. Come on.
And how the hell did he get that drug?
That's a really good, I mean, I guess, as they said, his dead sister had a prescription, so he just kept filling his dead sister's prescription.
But that isn't the way it works.
Well, especially because she's been dead for a decade. I feel like someone would have noticed. In a bureaucratic state like Taiwan. Sorry, in Taiwan.
It's Taiwan. Yeah,
Taiwan. Like, they've got really good, healthcare and computers that track things. I think they would notice if someone kept getting the prescription of a dead woman's sedative for X amount of years. Also, kind of a powerful sedative to give to a 15-year-old.
This whole episode doesn't track. The only thing is that when I was watching it, all I could remember was, because I did see Contagion, and right. I'm going, oh, yes, okay, Taipei. Okay, so that's where Gwyneth Paltrow got it. Yes. You know, I'm watching this episode, and that's what comes to mind, right?
Yeah.
Anyway, yeah, it's a massive sedative. This whole episode doesn't make any sense whatsoever. When we finally get to, I at least assumed at the end, when we got to the end of this episode, that the mother really had been abusing her children.
Yes, but no, they're like, no, the brother was a rapist.
The mother raped his sister, and that's why she was so, and that's why she sent him to boarding school, and that's why she killed herself. Well, excuse me, Mama. Instead of moving back to Taiwan, where instead of being a high-powered executive in New York,
you now sell flowers in a stall in Taiwan.
In Taiwan, maybe you could have gotten your daughter some serious
treatment and therapy if this was what was going on.
And besides, I don't believe it. So
okay.
That was it. I'm going, I don't know why, but I just don't believe it.
Well, you don't buy it because, like, the premise is not, like, really well established, and you don't really buy the situation at all. Like, you don't. And I get your objection. Also, what I don't understand is, like, I haven't online dated ever, but I know people who have. And it seems insane that in this online dating where these professional women are going to meet this man in public, they've got to have his picture. Like, how do these women not have what this guy looks like? I'm not saying Taiwanese women are shallow. I'm saying all women want to know what the person who they're going to meet looks like. And I don't think that's a crazy over-exaggeration either. I think it's kind of insane to imagine that they wouldn't have some idea what this man looked like before leaving, and that would be sitting on their phones and or computers, because of how technology works. So it seems to me like there's no conceivable reason the cops wouldn't already have a picture of the killer.
Yeah, because clearly he had pictures of the girl, the women.
We
know
he did. Because
they had to look like his mother.
Yes, he wouldn't have gone out with them if they didn't look just like his mother, who he was trying to get revenge on. So, how do they not have pictures of him? Like, there's honestly no way.
Yeah.
Also, by the way, there's something that's definitely, you have this, there's this line in there, right? Of how they find him, right? They say to Monty, we need the list of everybody who moved from Taiwan and who was living in Manhattan in 2001 and is living in Taiwan now. And he's like, that's going to be a long list. That's going to be really tough to break down. And I'm like, it is definitely not. Because they don't want a list of every single person. You want a list of men who were between 18 and 39 in 2001 and the equivalent 20 years later age now, right? It's got to be a man because of how he's, you know, luring out the women, right? So it's got to be a man, and he's got to have lived and he's got to have been 20-ish when he was at least when he was committing murders in Manhattan. So you actually got, yeah, you've got actually a very small,
now.
Yeah, well, exactly. Well, yeah. No, it's 15 years later, so he's got to be in his late 30s, early 40s. Yeah, mid to late 30s, early 40s is where he would be now, which he is, right? And it's like, that's a much, like, end. So you've got someone who was between 20 and 39 then, and also moved back to Taiwan, and I'm pretty sure that's a much smaller list than they're suggesting. And of course, they end up finding him, through the most basic method available, which is they just search down for who in that group of people who moved from one place to another had a prescription for midazolam. So it's not a hard catch at all.
Well, yeah, except that, of course, the mistake was thinking it was a man.
Yes, but
who
it was actually
moved, yeah.
You're right. It was actually the sister's prescription, but it's still not that much of a reach. Like,
no.
And, you know, once they go to the sister, the quote-unquote sister's apartment and find a creepy doll and all the pictures, they know immediately who did it, so.
Yeah.
It's basically, you're right that it's not the actual person who had the prescription, but it's a very simple solve to check, well, here's a drug they needed, plus people who moved, and yeah, there's almost nobody who fits that criteria. You're just shortening the, you're just adding more criteria until you run out of people. Because, as we learned from the show Unsub, all profiling is really just statistics. It's just managing statistics.
Yeah.
And the likelihood of X, Y, or Z having done a thing. So yeah, it's a really good show, Unsub. But anyway, we're not here to talk about Unsub. No, it's an unsatisfying episode because, I mean, we are more likely to rankle and recoil at the suggestion that someone was just a bad seed and uncontrollable and they caused all the problems for themselves, because that's 99% of the time not how things operate. Yes, there are people with personality disorders, and yes, there are people with brain damage that do behave badly and cause all of these problems, and we would call quote-unquote bad seeds. But by and large, people act this way because of stuff that happened to them. And it is possible that, like, if he was molesting his sister, it had more to do with screwed up abuse at the hands of his mother and the fact that they were abandoned alone for months at a time by an incredibly busy mother who was not concerned about the kids at all.
And obviously didn't hire a nanny.
With all of her money, yeah.
And didn't get her children, and if he had been having problems, didn't get her children any kind of family therapy.
Nope.
And, you know, the whole thing.
So yeah,
and then that stupid ending where Clara and Emily are dancing.
I know.
I just, oh, okay, well, yeah.
Fine.
Yeah, fine.
I've already checked out mentally from this episode.
Yeah, from this episode, so if that's how you want to end it, feel free.
Well, the funny part is, it's not like, I was going to say something. that bothers me is it's like they remember how they were when they were youth and blah 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 blah, and they're remembering their friend and all that, and it's like they're so different now. And I'm like, here's the thing though, I don't know that Emily really is that different, because what we know about Emily is that Emily likes to drink. I'm just saying, it's like she and her lady friends go out and party all the time.
Still, she has never,
stopped living that kind of life. She has nothing to tie her down. She's never had a serious relationship in her life other than Ian Doyle. Other than with Ian Doyle, she's never had a serious relationship in her life. She goes out drinking with her friends all the time. And it's like, yeah. What's the woman whose husband died? Is that Clara?
Clara.
That's Clara. Okay. And Clara, yeah, she's a bit, you know, held in because her husband died and she's still messed up about it. But, you know, was murdered and she's still messed up about it. But that's not Emily's issue. Emily is not suffering from the same kind of... She is not a restrained person. She is not a person who is just businesslike and worried about how she's going to appear. It's like, come on!
Emily? Yeah,
that's not who Emily Prentice is at all. She is not a stick in the mud.
No, never has been.
No, and I mean, her lack of professionalism is why the idea of her taking over the team was always so ridiculous. And the idea of her becoming the director of the FBI is just insane. She's not even a lawyer, you know?
Yeah.
Do you think they would let someone who isn't a lawyer be the head of the FBI? It's like, you're running the enforcement arm of the Justice Department. You kind of have to have a good sense of the law. You would think. But, you know, Trump liked her, I guess. Subtext. It's subtext, everybody. Address and subtext. All right, so yeah, Taipei, not an impressive episode. But I will say this. I didn't notice a lot of crazy, bigoted stuff about Taiwan and Taiwanese culture.
Of course not, because it's been run by the way the Americans run the FBI, because they've been training the people at the FBI. Although I have to admit that calling it Taipei...
God, you people and your puns. So ridiculous. I agree with that objection. I was going to try to get away with not mentioning it because it just makes me roll my eyes. But no, like, it's good you addressed it.
This episode is just roll my eyes and burst out laughing.
Well, then again, I mean, it's like the episode where, what was the episode where the title told us the entire plot? Oh, right. Made in, and then it was set in Bangladesh, and it's like, and we were like, oh, so the episode is about someone getting revenge because their family was killed in a factory fire.
Oh dear.
It's like, we know the whole episode's plot based on the title. They're not careful. All right, so let's move on to our second episode of the night, where one of two episodes about, you know, crazy monsters on the loose. Synopsis.
Oh, it's called Obey.
Obeya.
No, Obeya? It's called...
Oh,
no,
right. It's just called Obey. Because they love their... We just talked about how much they love their blanking puns. My bad. Sorry. It's called Obey.
While Garrett worries for his son Ryan, who was taken out of a Mexican prison by the FBI after a botched undercover assignment... No, apparently it was successful. The IRT team heads to Kingston, Jamaica to investigate ritualistic murders connected to a mentally disturbed suspect who survived a gunshot to the head and is acting out delusions related to native legend.
Do you mean religion? His religion? Is that what you're calling a native legend now? Jesus. So yes, it's about a zombie. It's an episode about a zombie. There's a zombie running around. There's no other way to describe it. There's a zombie running around. Also, they're not called in to investigate murders.
No.
There's only been one body dropped when they're called in.
And it
It was just literally a guy stabbed with a knife. And the Kingston cops, who are incompetent, apparently... We're going to frame his cousin for the crime. And so the FBI was called in to help because the cousin's dad is connected.
Politically connected.
Obviously, no, you're right. So when I say connected, there's a 50% chance I mean the mafia. So you're right. I should have been clear.
Yeah, yeah.
Politically connected.
Politically
mobbed
connected.
Up. Yeah. No. But yes, and that is the plot of this episode. And you know what? Sure. I know that it's weird that that's my only reaction to this episode.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's literally just, it's kind of dumb and kind of, and it's mostly just a race against time to figure out who this guy is. But they have, then again, his fingerprints and DNA at the crime scenes, so it's not really that hard to figure out who this guy is. He's a zombie, it's not like he was trying to, cover his tracks. And I know he's not actually a zombie, he hasn't been given pufferfish venom. And an Obeya has not, brainwashed him and made him think he was dead and now a servant, because that's how zombies are created, by the way. It's very fun, like, this aspect of their religion. It's weird, because they only talk about the history of voodoo, hoodun, Obeya. You know, they don't talk, it's weird to have something said in Jamaica, and not mention that, like, 80% of Jamaica are all Jewish. Like, it's very strange.
Or Rastafarian.
Well, Rastafarianism is a branch of Judaism.
Well, it's sort of a weird... Yes. Okay.
It is. It is a branch of Judaism. It's just a weird,
very, very offset. Yes, because it came out of Ethiopia.
Yeah. It's Ethiopian Messianic Judaism, where they believe that the second coming has happened, and Haile Selassie is the return of the Messiah, right? Is the Messiah.
Yeah, yes. And you have to. It's fascinating to watch some of the reggae music.
Oh God,
Jimmy Cliff and stuff, and somebody put together. I usually show it to my class. I can't remember what context. I do when I talk. Anyway, but there is a time when I tend to show this, a lot of the reggae. Oh, I know. It's when I'm showing music, because...
Yeah.
Yeah, about just about the Babylonian captivity, but we're also talking about Ethiopia stuff. And I go...
Yeah.
And I take By the Waters of Babylon, and I show that. Nice. I have about 10 different versions of By the Waters of Babylon on one of my playlists, which is just
like, people might wonder, and that's the thing, people might wonder to themselves, if they don't know a lot about it, hey, why so much Old Testament stuff in reggae music?
Well,
because they're all Jews.
Yes.
Like, it's made by an offshoot of Messianic, Ethiopian Messianic Judaism. Like,
it's
all
weird,
of these guys, their stories and their traditions are part of the Jewish canon, right?
It's funny because people don't realize that there were Jews at the, you know, down at the head of the Nile and the rest of it. They all moved. Like, they just moved around. There were Jews, for heaven's sakes, in Peru, and they don't, is it Peru or,
yep.
I think it was Peru that they, and they don't even quite know how they got there,
yeah.
Because they'd been there, because they were there, because their ritual days are different than rabbinic Judaism, which is the one we're most familiar with, and they are still working as if they had a Samaritan calendar and stuff. Anyway, yeah, so before the canon, so the there was a whole group.
Means they split off
in India,
ages ago.
Ages, like a thousand years ago, more than a thousand years ago. And the same thing, like, you have Jews in India and China and, So it was a religion that moved around the world and then Christianity, which is just another offshoot or form of Judaism that then became the religion of the Western world.
Religion of the Western
world. But, anyway, so we just see the one Rasta.
We just see
guy,
the,
right?
We see a bit of the Rastafarianism, but almost none.
Yeah, none.
I was important. So one of the things that I was so embarrassed by that we forgot to mention while watching the Taipei episode was that everybody kept speaking English when they were in private.
I know.
And it's like, you kind of feel like they had done market research about how many subtitles their audience was willing to read.
Yeah.
So they're like, people kept coming up with excuses to talk, speak English with each other when they were alone.
Yeah.
And what was funny was I was watching this episode afterwards and I'm like, oh, take that, American viewer. They're not going to subtitle this guy speaking in his Jamaican patois.
I know. And I'm going, do you understand it?
I love it when they got to the Rastafarian man, and I'm like, oh, this is so great. I was just imagining the people pausing and then rewinding, like, did he say?
What did he say? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, it was very entertaining for me. but yes, I know I enjoy that, because they didn't subtitle. They're like, no, it's fine. He's speaking English. You know, just because it's the Jamaican version of English doesn't make it not English. The audience should be able to understand. But yeah. Then again, the audiences in America even have problems with British accents. So, you know, maybe they were asking too much.
As we know, the most famous case, and I keep wondering whether it's still the same, but the most famous case is Mad Max.
Oh, God, where they dubbed him.
They had to redub it because people couldn't understand the Australian accent.
Yeah, the Australian accents. The original release of Mad Max in North America. Yeah, they redubbed everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they're like, I mean, it's a really good, fun little, you know, Death Wish revenge thriller, but why, but, you know, Americans can't understand what anybody's saying. So it was completely redubbed. And I would imagine that George Miller took the lesson and made sure everyone spoke a lot more clearly in The Road Warrior. Because everyone does speak very clearly and intelligibly in The Road Warrior. There's no thick accents in The Road Warrior.
No.
And I think that's by design.
It's sort of more bland Canadian accent.
You know? Yeah, almost middle of the road. I mean, they're still obviously Australian, but it's very different.
Yeah.
By the way, is it crazy that I had no idea that there are fewer people in Australia than there are in Canada? I really didn't know. I mean, if you had asked me, I found out yesterday that there's 29 million people in Australia. If you had asked me the day before how many people live in Australia, I would have, like, pictured the size of Australia, done a little math about how many people lived in the big cities on the coast, and then figured out how many coastal cities there were, and been like, 50 million people, probably. And I would have been off by 20 million people. Because it's less than 30 million people in Australia.
Yeah.
It's crazy.
Well, that's space. Well, that's because, I mean, you look at it, yes, but most of it is, unless you are an Australian Aboriginal, You haven't got a clue how to survive.
Most
of it is this weird kind of desert.
Yeah.
I have some pictures here, right?
Yeah.
Where you see and the trees and the animals, everything is so different. So the only place to live is inside, right? There are people who live in the middle of Australia, like in Alice Springs. And things like
I've
that.
I've seen Walkabout. I know what the middle of Australia is like.
Yeah, it is just a scrub desert.
Yeah.
But not sand desert.
No.
It's not like packed the Sahara earth. Or anything.
Yeah, it's all packed, cracked earth.
And you do have, as I said,
dry brush
scrub.
Everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's how the whole continent was able to be set on fire last year.
Yeah.
Because of all the scrub everywhere.
Yeah, it was just terrible.
Oh yeah, it was a nightmare.
But I mean,
the reason,
even when...
okay, I've taken us a bit far afield, and I apologize for that. But it's only because there's almost nothing to this episode. There's almost no content to this episode. Literally, there's a guy walking around stabbing people, and they're worried somebody's going to frame this American guy. But then, literally 6 hours after this American guy has been thrown in jail, like, the same zombie goes and brutally stabs a woman. So the guy's cleared, obviously.
Yeah, because he's in jail.
Because he's in jail when the brutal stabbing
happens. For once. Oh, and that was a terrible... that was just such a god-awful between Jack and the head of the...
Yep.
The Jamaican detective who said, no, I'm going to keep him in here, right? But just Jack's, you know, oh, I just went.
You know, he's trying to pull rank on guys in their own country.
Yeah, he's trying.
So he always does.
And all I can say is, thank God Jack didn't get his way.
Yeah.
Because this guy would have been a suspect then.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's actually good that he got kept in prison. I mean, it's weird it takes them till the end of the episode to let him out after there have been two more zombies murders, one of which everybody witnessed that a zombie did it. You know, so it's weird that he was in jail for that long. But the point is, like, it was not hard to catch this guy. He left his, like, fingerprints everywhere.
Fingerprints, he left DNA,
he left DNA blood, everywhere, and it's like there was a witness. So it's like he was not hard to track down in any way, shape, or form. And so they just, I mean, they end up solving the case by just, like, running fingerprints and then going to the hideout of the mob boss he's known to have worked for.
Yeah.
It is not a difficult crime for the team to get to the bottom of. And then, like, there the guy's pointing a gun at his head, and then he's like, oh, right. Yeah, the guy I was working for is a bad guy because he tried to kill me. And then they do a little, they, at the very end of the episode, try to make the episode about something, like to give it a theme really abruptly by having him say, oh yeah, no, it's because this guy, he was a father to you, and, you know, you were betrayed because you lacked your own father. And I'm like, I don't think that matters at this point, Jack. Like, I don't, like, you're standing in a room with a zombie and a crime boss holding a gun to the zombie's head. Like, I don't think why any of this happened is relevant anymore. I know you have to pretend it is, because for some reason, and this is the part I don't really get, like, I understand why Criminal Minds, right, is about, and this is something we probably should have mentioned before the second last episode we're doing about this, right? I understand why Criminal Minds is about profilers, because it's about the BAU.
Yeah.
But why do they put such so much pressure on profiling as the main key for catching people? At least they're pretending. It's obviously every week other methods are used to catch the criminal, because profiling doesn't help. But why are they still acting like profiling is so important when they're not in the BAU? Like, yeah, they're not in the BAU, but they still talk about profiling all the time.
And they don't even really have a profiler.
No. That's the strange part. There's no profiler on the team, but they talk about profiling all the time, just like on the regular show. But this isn't a show about that.
Except maybe Jack in a former life was a profiler.
Yeah, maybe he studied profiling with Mandy back in the day.
Yeah, or something, you know.
It's pretty peculiar. It's just a little weird how they talk about it. It's like, we've got to understand profiling and the motive. And I'm like, I'm pretty sure you don't.
Like, no. That's for the courts to handle.
We'll worry about that later on, guys. All right, so let's move on to the third and craziest episode. Maybe the craziest episode the show has ever done.
Not the worst episode, the craziest. The IRT heads to Kathmandu, Nepal, to investigate a brutal killing of two Americans on a yoga retreat. The team's investigation becomes complicated when local authorities believe the killings to be committed by the mythological Yeti, only to discover their killer's motive is far more disturbing.
I don't think that is far more disturbing.
No, I don't either.
No, like, there being a real Yeti is a lot more disturbing than a guy was starving. Like, yeah. The motive is, I'm hungry? That's not that scary a motive. People do a lot of crazy stuff when they're hungry. Just putting it out there.
Yeah.
So, yeah, like, weird thing. Also, they're not coming to investigate the death of two Americans. They're coming to investigate the death of an American, but it turns out a second American was dead. And they didn't realize it.
You know, how fast does that jet go? I swear, in this show, you would swear that it's like a couple of hours from Quantico to
Kathmandu,
Nepal. I don't even think you, I don't know, but can you even
can't do a direct flight. No, you can't do a direct flight. They're flying to Japan and refueling. 100%. That's the only way they could get
there. Or the Philippines and refuel.
Oh, you're right. What am I saying? Not Japan. Yeah. They can fuel up at a military base in the Philippines. But the point is, they're flying to Guam. They're flying from there to San Francisco. They're fueling up in San Francisco. They're flying to Guam. and then they're flying to Kathmandu. That is like, you know, a 30-hour flight.
Having traveled from Sydney, Australia, back to Sault Ste. Marie, trust me.
Yeah, it's a 30-hour, like, that's a 30-hour trip they're going on.
It's terrible. If you go, you have to stop in L.A.
Yeah.
You know, like from Sydney. Like, if there is a direct flight to L.A. Now, normally what you do is you would have a couple of stops and the rest of it. They had a special plane. Oh, it must have been 79, I guess. And that plane flew direct. But we were in Melbourne, so we went from Melbourne to Sydney. In Sydney, we caught the plane that flew straight to L.A.
Nice.
Right? And then, but that was a long flight. That was 10, 11 hours.
Yeah.
Just that flight. And then you had to fly the next day from L.A. to Toronto. And then we had to stay overnight in Toronto to catch the plane to the Sioux, because there aren't that many planes to the Sioux.
Going to Sault Ste. Marie, yeah.
Yeah.
Damn, though. Okay, so yeah, it's an ordeal, and the show does not treat it like it's an ordeal.
Ever. Fine. Anywhere. They fly anywhere in, like, 2 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, I can't understand. Okay, I didn't talk about this in Taipei. This was another thing that was so stupid. Were they still in Japan when Emily Prentice and Clara did their little dance?
First off, not Japan. Taiwan.
I mean Taiwan.
They're not. They were back because they were back in the office set.
Yeah, I know, but
I know that's another 20 hours.
They're still in Japan, and Clara says, Taiwan. Well, I gotta go talk Taiwan Emily. And I gotta go talk to someone.
And then 20 hours later she's talking to Emily. I know.
Moving
from country to country is the same as going from one room to the next.
You know, I mean, it's just like, I mean, it's bad enough with the regular Criminal Minds.
Yeah, but this is especially awful, because at least there, I mean, other than the time they went to Alaska, they really are never more than, you know, 5 hours from anywhere they need to investigate.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah,
unless it's in the middle of nowhere and they don't have a
big enough airstrip for their plane. Oh, no, they drive a very small. It's not like the Criminal Minds.
Oh, that's
the
right.
Borders team. They have a very small plane. There would be very few airstrips that couldn't take their plane.
Yeah, that's right. You know? They have a small Learjet.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
So yeah.
Yeah.
It's just interesting that this show never really grapples with the amount of travel time this team is going through.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, it is they are doing a crazy amount of traveling. It's taken them forever to get anywhere, and the show just elides over it deeply unrealistically.
Yeah.
Although, deeply unrealistically is kind of the wheelhouse where this show lives. Oh, come on. It's so true. All right, so let's get into it. They're looking for people. They find a guy they find a bunch of footprints, which suggests the guy's walking around barefoot, and I'm like... But when we meet him, he's like fully dressed in still wearing a parka and jeans. And like he's like fully clothed. So I don't know why he's walking barefoot through the freezing mud and a little bit of snow that's left. Like, why is he barefoot? Because I got to tell you, he's only been gone for like less than half a year. And if the rest of his clothes have survived just fine, it would be weird if his, you know... rigid high-tech hiking boots wouldn't have survived.
Okay, so it's only been 6 months?
Yeah. It's only been six months.
Then this show is even more stupid than I thought.
Or maybe 8 months. But the point is it was last year's earthquake. Because remember at the beginning, they're still recovering from last year's earthquake. When they get there, that's what the cops are talking about. How we just had that bad earthquake last year, where everybody got killed. And that's when the guy's family, the guy's wife was killed and his whole expedition was killed, except for him. And then he had to eat their bodies to survive. That's the subject. They don't say that's what happened, but we know that's what happened.
Okay, but then again, how the hell did his hair get that long?
It's 6 months. He already, I don't know if he was completely clean shaven, but 6 months is plenty of time to 6-8 months is plenty of time to grow a bushy beard.
No, I'm not talking about the beard. I'm talking about his hair.
Yeah, but his hair's not, like, down to his shoulders. It's just, you know, big and fluffy. It's unkempt. But he's only got, like, you know, 6 inches, 8 inches of hair. Right?
Yeah, but in 6 or 8 months, like, if your hair grows
half an inch a month. So, okay, it had added another 4 inches to however much hair he had. Yeah.
You know, like, mine grows fast. I will say, like, mine grows about an inch a month.
Yeah, some people have faster hair growth than others. So, okay, it's not
so maybe he had really, really fast-growing hair.
Exactly. That's what you have to assume. Yes, he does look like more of a crazy wild man than he probably should have, like, given the relatively not that huge amount of time he spent out in the woods. But, yeah. He's had a rough time, and maybe how rough a time he had affected his body's ability to grow hair. I don't say things that make sense.
Oh, maybe eating human flesh.
Exactly. There you go.
So much protein. Gives you so much protein because that's what your hair is.
There you go. Right? Yes.
It's dependent on protein. And,
yeah. So yeah. That could be it. There you go. See?
But, you know, I mean, in his feet, well, okay.
There's no excuse for him being barefoot. There's just no excuse for that.
Yeah.
There's no explanation for why this character would not have shoes.
Yeah, I don't understand that, even though, you know, like, I mean, mind you, his boots might have gotten, if his feet, but did his toes get... No,
but he's been killing people.
I know.
He's been killing people and eating them. Some of them had shoes.
Yeah.
You know, why aren't you taking their shoes? You're still enough of a person that you know to wear your clothes. Like, you're still messed up, but you know you need shoes, so go for it. You know, it's like, no, the idea that he is only not wearing shoes so that they can think it's a Yeti.
Yeah.
It's the only reason he's not wearing shoes, and that's not a good enough reason. Show. Like, so that the characters can be confused is not a good reason for a character to do a thing in the world of that show. Just putting that out there. I found that very frustrating watching him, you know, clomp around in shoes. I'm like, no.
No shoes. Yeah, clomp around without shoes. Like, I don't understand. Yes. I mean, there's the girl.
It's a very silly episode.
Yeah, and do the local authorities sort of believe it that Yetis exist?
Yes, they seem to believe Yetis exist.
Yes, they do, you know, but
then at the same time, you've got the local Buddhist monk who's like very coy about Yetis.
Well, yes. He's
like, isn't Yeti just really a way of describing how humans are? And the thing is, what we're dealing with this episode, and I should make this clear, because the show doesn't. Nobody knows enough to say this on the show. We're not dealing with a Yeti. We're dealing with a Wendigo. Mm. Because, like, what happens in the show is literally a Wendigo origin story in that it is a guy who has, for desperation's need, had to eat human flesh to survive. And now he no longer feels like he is a human anymore, and he continues eating human flesh because he has become a beast. And in Algonquin, is it Algonquin or is it, I think it's Algonquin mythology, the Wendigo. But anyway, it might be Mohawk. I'm not great with who has
I don't
Wendigo.
Think it's, no, it's not Mohawk.
No.
Anyway,
no,
it's okay.
I think it's Algonquin, but that's not important. But anyway, in their mythology, because they understand, like, you can say, well, an evil spirit got into him when he committed the sin, or you can say that humans are so screwed up by the desperation of having to eat human flesh that they purposefully turn themselves into beasts so they won't have to face up to what they did. Right? And so both are equally good justifications for the, you know, vast behavioral changes we're talking about. But yeah, the show doesn't know enough to say, oh, he's a Wendigo. But he is a Wendigo, for all intents and purposes. Like, that's what this man becomes. It's scary, and he looks messed up. And it's honestly a little messed up that they did this episode at the same time. Like, roughly, like, part of the year-wise, the Criminal Minds was doing an episode about a man who turned himself into a werewolf to get over a psychological trauma.
Yeah, well.
It's just kind of weird that both would happen so close to each other, is what I'm saying.
No. This writing room is now finishing up, right?
Yeah.
But this writing room, so they must have had these different ideas.
Yeah.
And of course, they didn't want to go to England. So, you know, and werewolves. So they decided they moved it later. Yeah.
Yeah. The New York werewolf. We'll do a New York werewolf and we'll go and do
a.
I mean, remember the same episode otherwise.
Remember the same showrunner for both shows.
That's true. So it's not like she didn't know that one of her shows was doing a Yeti episode and the other one of her shows was doing a werewolf episode.
Yeah.
You'd think that a professional would look at those two episodes and be like, maybe I shouldn't do both the same season. But that's why we don't make the big bucks that an Erica Messer does, because she's the only one who would have the guts to. Yeah, let's the same week, essentially, or close to it, have both teams battle a crazy guy who thinks he's a supernatural monster. Well, they did the werewolf last year. I'm sorry, the vampire last year. So, you know, it was only a matter of time before we got a werewolf.
And but a yes, Yeti. Although, Yeti. Really, as you say, a Wendigo.
It's more Wendigo than Yeti, yes.
Yeah, it's, anyway, yes, the Wendigo is Algonquin.
Oh, it is Algonquin. I'm glad I was right the first time.
Yeah,
you were right,
yeah. And I was going to say Mi'kmaq, yeah, but they're all sort of the Algonquin.
Yeah.
Sort of the Great Lakes region and all of that sort of stuff, Wendigos.
Absolutely. Which is why it's so weird. There's a video game that prominently features Wendigos. And my reaction to it was, wow, it's so weird to see an American, you know, made game set in Canada, because it's about Wendigos. But beyond that, it really bothered me that it was set out in, like, Alberta. And I'm like, there's no Wendigos in Alberta.
No, Wendigo. No. No, they're not in Alberta.
Yeah.
Alberta's... Well, yeah, somebody looked it up a week ago and said they were in Canada, so
that's the extent of what they thought.
You know, yeah. No. All of the Plains tribes are all very different, right? Yeah,
they all have completely different mythology.
Yes, they have mythologies. They're more normal in Alberta. They're more related to the Lakota and Dakota.
Yeah. And all the Sioux
mythologies,
tribes.
Yeah, and the Sioux tribes, and like the Blackfoot and everything else. Anyway, there are Cree, although in northern Alberta. But anyway, never mind.
Yeah. That's been a fun little primer into Native mythology that has more to do with this episode than the whole Yeti myth.
I just thought. But, you know, and I mean, I thought the Buddhist, well, you say he was being coy, but, you know, I mean, he's basically
offering a psychological explanation, interpretation for the events that they normally do. Yeah, no, absolutely.
Yeah. And the Yeti, I mean, as far as I understand it, the Yeti doesn't kill humans, does it?
Not much. I mean, theoretically they do, but generally Yetis are thought to just keep to themselves the same way Sasquatch do.
Yeah.
By the way, just FYI, yes, I believe in Sasquatch. I've got no reason to. It's probably a silly thing to believe, but later, if anyone asks you, hey, does that guy believe in Sasquatches? Yeah, 100% he does. There's no question.
No, and this was the funny thing, is that they're going, you know, the Yeti is real, but the Sasquatch isn't?
Because it was just, you know, people trying to cash in. I'm like, that's kind of a naive way to look at the world there, buddy.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I know people who have found Sasquatch footprints. So, you know, I'm more likely than most to believe it. Then again, the two of us saw a UFO one time. So maybe this stuff just happens to us.
Oh, we've talked about this before.
We've talked about it before.
It was so weird. It was the weirdest thing. Who knows what it was? But
well, I mean, it was obviously an actual aircraft of some kind. Like, it was clearly a real, like, people like, you probably saw the planet Venus. And I'm like, Venus doesn't hover 200 feet in the air slowly across a bunch of trees shining lights on things.
No, it doesn't work like that. Yeah, but, you know, we also that might have been a different trip where we saw those. Oh, my God, and I would assume they were carrying radioactive material or something.
Oh, yeah. No, that was a different trip.
Those purple trucks.
Yeah, one time we saw these purple trucks with millet that were, you know, not decorated in any way, shape, or form. They had no labels except for they were both very bright people, purple, and they were being driven by people from the military.
It was,
and they had, like, really high-end coolers on them.
Yeah.
Like, they were refrigerated trucks, and the refrigeration was going, you know, full blast. And, like, were they moving nuclear waste and didn't want to tell anybody about it?
Yeah, you know.
Because that was the kind of vibe we got.
Yeah, you know, you just... And I think it was at the time when they were trying to figure out what to do with some of the nuclear waste.
Yeah, the chocolate.
And there was... Yeah, and there was a thing about moving it up north, or moving it down in Deep River. Yeah, or moving it down, like, underground, burying it underground and stuff. But anyway, yeah, it was really... And whether...
What we're saying is, every now and then, super weird stuff happens to us.
That's me. Because we watch things.
Yeah, you know, absolutely. And I think we, you know, we're more likely to be open to that kind of stuff, like the Yeti stuff, because we actually have had weird experiences of our own. And honestly, the Yeti is such a boring idea. There's a large monkey living in North America that, you know, it's kind of hard to see why it would be fake, because it's just really not that crazy of an idea that, you know, the Pacific Northwest is a pretty huge place.
And empty. Like, it's empty. Yeah, and it's all very, very strange because there are, you know, and I mean, I guess what I didn't like was, you know, if you were going to suggest that the Yeti exists, right, you don't have to call it sort of like this weird beast or something. And to dismiss the fact that there are other forms of humanoids in existence, because that's what they were doing. Why didn't we get our anthropologist into the conversation?
It's good old Clara.
Yeah, she's an anthropologist. She should be able to talk about this to some extent. Like, that, yes, they might be mythological, but the point is that we have found different types of humanoids. Now, mind you, they're all dead.
Yeah.
But, you know, a different evolutionary...
No,
but of course...
Points.
Whoa.
Please.
This show doesn't believe in evolution.
Damn.
Wait till you see the last episode.
Yeah, well, we're going to be talking about the last episode soon. Next. Oof. Yeah, I've seen it, but we're not going to be talking about it this week. But yeah,
no, they don't believe in evolution. That's
okay.
It.
Weird thing about this episode, though, is how, like, they out of nowhere try to be like, we should all be very concerned about Jack's son who's still in Mexico. I'm like, you should have given us a heads up that was going to continue to be an issue right after the Mexico episode. Right? But they suddenly spring it on us to show that he's really worried about his son. And then at the end of the episode, after nothing has happened, he suddenly tells, oh no, your son's fine. I'm like, okay. So you're just trying to create artificial... He doesn't even have any reason to be worried about his son. He's not... All he knows is his son was let out of prison and he doesn't know the next step. Well, guess what? I think one of your buddies in the FBI would have told you had your son been kidnapped by the cartels.
Yeah, come
on. It's probably fine.
I'm sure Mateo would have given
a heads up. Absolutely he would
have. Yeah, they couldn't even pay Mateo for this
episode. To be on the episode, I know. Well, as you say, it's a show with a very big budget. Like, they do spend a lot of money on these locations. But yeah, it is weird that, like, they didn't get him on the phone for one scene.
Yeah, because they did earlier on. But
he was there in the Mexico episode, yeah.
Yeah, but, you know, I mean, yes, so he was worried. And I'm going, okay, yeah, but that was last episode he was worried. This episode we find out he's fine, and I'm going, well, yeah, Jack, I just... Then why is your son in the FBI in the first place?
If you're going to be this freaked out about him all the time. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, anyway, we discussed that in the Mexico episode.
We did.
Yeah. So anyway, so his son is okay.
His son's fine. They shoot the Yeti, who, you know, winds up not, I mean, once you know it's a Yeti, once you know it's a Wendigo, like, really, all you have to do is just walk through the woods until you find him and, you know, just follow his trail. And that's exactly what they do. Like, it's not hard to find him at all.
And he did. And he pulled the suicide by cop or suicide by military.
In this case. Yeah. Well, no, it's fine.
Yeah.
601.
Yeah. I mean, like, he didn't want to go on living. I mean,
I get it.
I can't imagine.
I mean, he's been a cannibal for living as a cannibal for almost a year. It's a rough
and
life.
He's lost all of his friends. He's lost his wife. He's no longer sane in any sense.
Nope.
That the world, I mean, he's just working on some kind of atavistic need to survive.
It is 100% instinct at this point. That's all that he has left, you know? And so like, I don't begrudge this man wanting to get shot dead by the military rather than having to face up to what he had become.
And as you say, and that isn't going to stop the belief in the Yeti anyway.
Of course not. No, not at all.
Why would it?
Why would it? Just because this guy turned himself into a Yeti, actually Wendigo, doesn't mean that Yetis aren't real. You'd have to be a fool to think it did. So,
well,
it's
in fact,
not
if somebody
anything.
Had actually said, well, you know, actually, he was a Wendigo.
That would have been nice.
That would have been nice, but yeah. No,
don't know about Wendigos.
Well, that would have meant that somebody would have had to do a little bit more research than the show can afford. So,
afford? Research ain't expensive. They're just lazy.
Well, you know, I mean, it's all that footage.
Yeah, all the stock footage costs them so much money. They can't afford to have fact checkers or researchers. Sure,
oh,
why not?
You're kidding, nasty. That's just
that was just mean.
Well, I've already seen the last episode. Of Frig.
Yeah, you have a right to be mean at a certain point.
At a certain point, we have now gone through 25
episodes of this.
This show, and I am. Oh, these three were just.
Yeah.
I mean, at least the first one made me laugh.
That's true.
This one, I. You see, they don't have. There's something missing. And I think I know essentially what it was is that Criminal Minds in the first couple of years, like I'm trying to think. Well, no, we need to talk about that when we do the last episode.
Of course.
Okay, yeah, so I'm not going to talk about that. Just remind me when we get around to doing the next episode that I need to discuss sort of the difference. Well, we're going to discuss why this is so disturbingly bad for a lot of different reasons.
Compared to Criminal Minds. Well, that's what I mean. Next week, we're going to be coming back doing episode 213 and talking about the show as a whole.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so that should be a lot of fun. I expect us to get real angry all over again. It's crazier things have happened. So that should be a lot of fun. And we will see. Oh, and hey, how did we not mention until I'm doing it this second, the yoga lady was Charisma Carpenter.
Oh, I was trying to say, yes. No, right away. I mean, I just saw, like, it was so funny at the opening. You just saw her kind of moving. Yeah. And I thought,
who was that playing the friend? Why do I recognize her?
No,
Charisma Carpenter.
I knew who she was.
Right away. Gotcha.
Buffy and Angel. It's only because I was talking to my sister who's now starting to look for something else to watch. And so I said, well, why don't you come over and just get my box set of Buffy?
Yeah.
All 7 years. It's in a box. It's nice and handy. You know, you can knock on my door. I'll slip it out the door to you.
I'll just wipe it down with rubbing alcohol and leave it in the mailbox or something like that.
Yeah, no. She'll have to knock on the door. Because
You don't want somebody to see it.
It wouldn't. No. Oh, my God. No.
I know.
Yes, I got it.
I'm not questioning you.
I got it on sale. And I think that was an amazing deal. Yeah, it was really an amazing deal. And it was this wonderful box set. And it's got every episode in it.
And all the special features. Now, Buffy's fantastic, as we know.
Yeah, and now I have your guy's copy of Angel. So
yeah, so
she can have that afterwards.
No, but Buffy, if there's one thing we want you to take away from this review of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders, it's that Buffy was a really good show and you should watch it.
Yeah.
I don't know how that became our overall message this week, but it's true.
It's true.
It really was a very good show that everyone should watch.
Well, what happened here? I'll tell you what happened because I have this Hollywood suite thing, right? Yeah. And Buffy, the original movie with Donald Sutherland.
Donald Sutherland, Chris Swanson, Luke Perry, right.
And actually David Arquette was in it. And
Paul Rubens,
Yeah,
Rutger Hauer. Really wonderful cast overall.
Yeah, yeah, a wonderful cast. A very short, like it's an hour and a half long.
Oh, yeah.
And it's easy to watch, and it's, but it's a good setup movie.
Yeah, for the,
series.
For the series.
It
really does help you understand how the world works right away. And yeah, did they change a couple of things? Sure. But generally, it really is a solid setup for the whole movie.
Yeah. For the whole series.
For the show. Sorry, for the whole show.
Yeah, it's funny. It was funny because I hadn't seen it in 20 years.
Years and years. Yeah.
Yeah. So
and you watch and you're like, no, this is still a really good movie. And it is.
Yeah, from beginning to end.
From beginning to end, yeah. It's really good. And plus, you get to watch Luke Perry, who's always great. We miss Luke Perry.
Yeah.
You should see Once Upon a Time in Hollywood at some point. Luke Perry's last screen role. I mean, he's in the movie for 2 minutes, but still, it was very great to see him.
Yeah, and it was nice seeing Charisma Carpenter, even though she didn't play a big role. I really enjoyed it.
She had one scene, but it's great seeing Charisma Carpenter anytime. I was an extra in a movie with her once.
Ta-da!
I know. She had just had her baby, and she was very addled. Some of the largest number of takes I've ever had to watch someone do as an extra. She was obviously a lot of stress with her, you know, having a newborn with her on the movie set. But I'm not here to talk about Charisma Carpenter's professionalism. In fact, we're not here to talk about Charisma Carpenter at all, sadly. So we will see you back here next time, where we're going to watch the last episode ever, thank heavens, of Criminal Minds Beyond Borders. Uh-huh. And then after that, we're going to do a kind of a look back on the series as a whole. So be sure not to miss that next week. And of course, on Thursday, you can join us back here for our continuing journey through season 13 of Criminal Minds, which is definitely a season of television.
I just realized
that we're almost on. We may have already talked about in the episode they're hearing Thursday, like a strong argument can be made is the worst episode of Criminal Minds, not from a bad messages standpoint, but from a just writing standpoint, the conspiracy theory episode.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Well, we'll get there. Okay.
We'll be there next week for us or the week after for us. I'm very excited to talk about that episode of television. It's the kind of episode that's so bad, you're like, maybe we just spend a whole hour on this one episode.
well, that's how legendarily
terrible that episode of television is.
Yeah, we'll actually take a look at how many episodes there are in the season.
Yeah.
You know, but anyway.
Yeah, that's a good idea. All right, let's wrap it up here. If you have any questions, if you have any comments, if there's any profiling-related fiction you think we'd enjoy checking out and could share with people, drop us a line at profilingcriminalminds@gmail.com. We would love to hear from you. We will see you. Oh, yes, and if you're listening to this on any kind of a podcatching client, be sure to rate and review it, because that is how people find the show. We'll see you back here for more Criminal Minds on Thursday. But until then, I'm going to say that's right. Au revoir.
And have a good couple of days.
Profiling Criminal Minds is a member of the Kinks Podcasting Network.